Okay, you can call me names, and you can besmirch the reputation of my mama, and you can even disrespect my college football team, but I tell you, when you disagree with my religion, or you look down on me because I'm not religious, you are tramping on the fearful vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. And wasn't that a song, as I recall? I kind of think it was. Well, since we're into the holiday season, with the word holiday deriving from the word holy day, what better way to spark some lively chatter on perspectives this morning than to have some folks who represent some very different faith traditions to talk about, of all things, religion. Of course, since these folks are part of the Village Square's regular program lineup, and they do a regular deal called Faith Food Friday, we know things are going to be civil, rational, and always thought-provoking. So let's go around the table and meet Reverend Betsy Ouellette of Good Samaritan United Methodist Church. So good to have you on.
I'm happy to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
We also have Reverend Dave Killeen of St. John's Episcopal Church, downtown Tallahassee. Dave?
Tom, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Our old friend Jack Romberg, Rabbi of Temple Israel, also in Tallahassee.
Nice to be here, Tom.
And the person who, without whom all this would not have been necessary, of course, Liz Joyner, Executive Director of the Village Square. Hey,
thank
Liz.
Thank you for having us, Tom.
Well, thank you for a great idea here for our perspectives. And how did you get all these guys together? I mean, it was sort of like, okay, let's get a Gator, let's get a Seminole, let's get someone representing the University of Auburn or whomever
exactly
else.
That was exactly it.
And let's put them all together and make them be nice to one another.
Yes, we like a challenge at the Village Square. Actually, it was sort of chance in some ways. I saw Rabbi Romberg and Father Dave one morning at Uptown Cafe for breakfast, and we were just chatting, and they were having breakfast with each other, and I was having breakfast with someone else, and we were chatting, and I said, you know, I'm really thinking of having a forum like this on faith issues at the Village Square, and they were actually meeting to discuss exactly that.
Yeah, Jack and I were getting together to talk about maybe team teaching some classes. And then we saw Liz come in with a few folks, and we just kind of sat down next to each other and got talking. And next thing you know, Faith Food Friday was born. It really was a great moment.
But it was one of those times when you sort of thought, well, I think we should do this now.
Yeah, but they talk about tap dancing on a landmine. I mean, the possibility of catastrophe is always there because we take faith, or for those folks who have no faith tradition or even avoid that sort of thing, we take it so seriously. This is such an intimate and integral part of who we are. And to have, well, you're different from me in that regard, and so are you, and over – how do you get the rapprochement where you can sit down and rationally find common ground on this stuff?
Well, I think the idea is not necessarily to find common ground, but to frame a discussion in a way that people who don't necessarily agree can have an intelligent exchange of where they're at and establish mutual respect.
Okay. Dave, what kind of things do you guys talk about at the Faith Food Friday? Sort of regular topics that might come up?
Well, most recently, we talked about what we call the December dilemma, about how to negotiate the tricky waters of the holidays with grace and with a little bit of style, and to love each other during that time, regardless of where we are and where we come at faith. So that's been a hot topic lately. What are some other topics, guys?
We did church and state in the 2012 election. That one was a hot one and challenging. We're having one next month on January 11th called the Most Segregated Hour.
And then, of course, on March 1st, we will talk about same-sex weddings, same-sex unions, and so forth.
But nothing controversial. That's
nothing
what I like.
Nothing
easy
at all.
Controversial. Gee. And Pastor Betsy, you kind of got pulled into this a little bit latter day here. How did you join this bunch?
I've just by invitation. I'm happy to be a part of it. I'm interested to hear the beginnings. That what you just shared with us about your idea of teaching together and coming together and having breakfast, and then you walked in at the same time. See, what I would say is that was a God incident, that there was synchronicity there and that God is in this thing. So I'm glad to be a part of something that I believe God is in.
Okay. Well, we also want to seek divine intervention when it comes to maybe getting some additional voices in the conversation. So we'll remind you that 414-1234, 800-926-8809 is the long-distance number. If it is long distance from you to Tallytown, and perspectives at WFSU.org is, of course, the email address. Betsy, you just said, having a – I don't want to call it micromanaging, but a ongoing, consistent – intersection of the divine with us here on earth, which is, you know, very much a part of a lot of faith traditions. It kind of sets up that quandary, though, of what we were talking about before we went on the air, the tragedy in Connecticut with the school shooting. If God does, I don't want to use the term meddle, but you know what I'm talking about, get into the affairs of people, and we pray and God answers our prayers and all that, indicates a direct connection between God and what happens here on earth. And when something of this horrific nature occurs, your first thing is, well, I can't call this God's will. How could a loving, beneficent creator do this to these children?
Right.
How do we reconcile that?
I reconcile that because I believe that there's a real evil in the world. And sometimes real evil wins. In the end, as a Christian, I believe that things will be set right. But I think that there's true good and evil. It's really out there.
Yeah. Rabbi Jack, what's your take on it?
Well, Jews are kind of used to dealing with this kind of question because the idea of, you know, how could God allow something like this? It's the same question we all asked ourselves after the Shoah, after mm-hmm. the Holocaust, is how could God allow this to happen? And for most Jews, the answer is that, you know, it's not what God allowed to happen. It's the actions of humans gone awry. And the role of God comes into when you need to draw on a source of strength to deal with the tragedy, there is where God's intervention comes, because your faith that you can make it right is drawn from the sense that God supports you and God will help you in your endeavor to do justice, in your endeavor to make right. But generally, Jews don't believe that God controls that everyday level of action, whereas God's providence is involved in setting the world up and then giving responsibility to humans to carry out what's going to happen.
Okay. Father Dave, the Episcopal take on it.
I would just add to what Jack and Betsy are saying that, you know, I strongly believe that God is very close to us. Our God doesn't stand off far during these most difficult moments of our lives. And for Christians in the Christmas season, of course, we're reminded of that in a little baby Jesus born in the city of Bethlehem. It's God who has come very close to us, God who is with us. And so, you know, on that day, I believe that the very first tears that were cried were God's in the wake of the school shooting. And as Betsy said, God is very much in putting things back right. God is in the repair.
God is in charge of the good.
That's right.
Okay. Now that we are in the holiday season, Betsy, war on Christmas. I keep hearing this from a number of angles, and most folks are going, what war? 85% of – or somewhere around that of folks in the U.S. say that they are Christian.
War
15%
on
of the
–
you know,
huh?
War on
– Well, I know there's a bunch of sermon series out there that you can actually purchase, and the Advent Conspiracy and different things like that are actually sort of doing that same thing in the sense of consumerism. Churches are actually taking on this idea that we've gone way overboard. Christmas is about the baby coming in a humble setting. It's not about all the hoopla. So I don't know. War on Christmas, that's an interesting thing. Who is making war and what are we making war on?
Yeah, because the angle that I hear is that these nefarious forces, whomever – secular humanists, that's it. It's these secular humanists that are out there or these godless people.
I don't believe they're going to give up eggnog.
Yeah.
Eggnog and twinkly lights and Christmas parties. And I think it's really a good part of our culture, the festivities. To me, Christmas is sort of secular in that sense.
Mm-hmm. But Rabbi Jack, I know you had something here. In fact, we were talking about it out in the lobby before we came in, that there was this ongoing thing. Should there be expressions of religion in public places? And at the Leon County Courthouse, it was, if we have a symbol of the Christian tradition, should we not also have a menorah representing the Jewish tradition? You kind of said,
Yeah, I don't believe in a tit for tat, because what happens is we give heightened importance to the menorah and Hanukkah as being symbolic of all things important Jewish, and that's just not the case. If you really want to understand Judaism, you have to understand Shabbat, which is a weekly occurrence, you know, the Sabbath and why you should be part of the Sabbath every week. You have to understand issues of atonement and issues of connection with God, issues of the historic experience of the wanderings in the wilderness of the Israelites and how we get to the promised land. None of that has anything to do with Hanukkah. So I my issue with Jews who want to make such a big to-do out of Hanukkah or non-Jews who say, well, we're going to give equal time to Jews by making a big to-do out of Hanukkah, is that Hanukkah doesn't give you an insight into what Judaism is truly about.
Oh, okay. That division between church and state, should it be a brick wall, a permeable membrane? What should it be? Dave, what do you think?
Tom, I think a permeable membrane is probably the best way to put it. You know, when I think of a public square without any religious symbols, I think of a public square that to me is not very interesting. You know, our faith is part of who we are as human beings. I believe that there is times where it's appropriate to have religious symbols in the public square. But to Jack's point, we need to be careful. It's not something that's a tit for a tat. It needs to be a natural expression of a community. And those in charge of those public squares do need to set guidelines for the community so that all have a voice. But I can't imagine the public square without our religious symbols. It's a much less interesting place for me.
Yeah,
and it depends what you mean by public square too. Do you mean an expression at a government building, which I think needs to be neutral territory, or do you mean something put up in the shopping mall, which is public area but it's sort of privately owned area? When you have it in a government-owned institution, that starts to imply that the government is endorsing a particular religious perspective, and that's where I get very – very prickly.
I don't know if I completely agree, Jack, on the sense of just having the symbol isn't an endorsement. So yeah, I was referring to government buildings, schools, that type of area, not just shopping malls.
No, Betsy, what do you think?
I kind of agree more with Dave, just because I think that it's cultural. It's part of our culture. There's, I mean, I can't imagine a society without celebration. And religious symbols and celebration is kind of what makes us really human, and we're able to enjoy each other when we know more about each other's holidays. And I don't think it's as big a deal as Jack does.
Ah, there's the rub. Let's let's follow up on that when we continue here on Perspectives. We're talking religion of all things here heading into the holiday season. Whether you have a faith tradition or not, we'd love to have you join the conversation at 414-1234, 800-926-8809, Perspectives at WFSU.org. We'll be right back. Thank you for joining us on Perspectives as we head into the holidays. Reverend Betsy Ouellette of Good Samaritan United Methodist Church, Father Dave Kalina of St. John's Episcopal Church, Rabbi Jack Romberg of Temple Israel, and Liz Joyner with the Village Square, all on Perspectives today as we talk about different faith traditions and religion and holy days and all that kind of thing. Jack, you were moving into another dimension of this whole thing about the intersection between religion and government.
Well, when you know, to kind of play off of the last comment just before the break, I was wanting to get into why it is a bigger deal for me and for Jews than perhaps for the Christian community. And I have to go right into the situation that happens in public schools. Public schools are funded by government money. It's funded by our taxpayers, by all of us who own property. And we too often have incidents of, frankly, Christian hubris that occurs in the public schools, of demands made on Jewish kids that are disproportionate to the demands made on other kids. And I'll give you a really great example. And we're not talking about Christmas time and Hanukkah time now. We're now talking about our high holidays, where teachers are insistent, some teachers get very insistent on giving a test on Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur when that child should be in synagogue. And I actually had an incident a few years back where a high schooler was told by a teacher that, well, why are you taking off on Yom Kippur? You should be here. So-and-so, who's a teacher who's Jewish, isn't taking off, as though that person is the right example. So I get prickly about the insertion of religious things into the public school arena in particular, because it puts Jewish kids, and by the way, not just Jewish kids, not that I can speak for the Muslim community, but Muslim kids and kids of other religions, in a very, very difficult position too. So I think that the assumption that gets made that everybody is celebrating Christmas is not an appropriate assumption, and it's not an appropriate assumption in the schools. And how this plays out in the Christmas season is when Jewish kids are then all of a sudden singing Christmas music, and they feel funny with that, and the teacher is not all that sympathetic sometimes.
Mm-hmm. But does that maybe hearken, though, from – you said hubris was the term that you used there, Jack, from this assumption on the part of many folks that, well, the United States is a Christian nation, and the predominant faith tradition should prevail. And if you know, little Jewish kids or Muslim kids don't like it, well, you know, tough. They can suck it up, and you know, maybe someday when they become the majority, we'll all be doing other things.
I don't believe that to be a good perspective. I would love it if Ramadan was celebrated appropriately and. Muslim kids were allowed to be a part of that and excused from class, and that all the holidays were honored, and that all children learned about the other cultures and religions of the people that they are playing in the playground with and living next door to. To me, that's would be ideal. How you do that in a school, how do you give this many holidays? Maybe it's possible. Maybe we shorten it up at Christmas and give a few days off here or there. To completely not recognize any holidays, any religion in public school, to me, would be to leave a huge void in education.
Yeah, but I can hear that now. Well, if we recognize the Jewish high holidays,
sure.
and then, you know, the Muslim kids will want off for Ramadan, right. And there'll be this, and where does it end? And then all this political correctness, you know,
I'm not talking about political correctness so much as respect, honor, and understanding of the people that are your neighbors.
I think there's also a difference between education and celebration. And it's fine to celebrate, and it's great to celebrate with your Christian friends and neighbors. And I've told stories of how I did it when I was growing up. But there is a difference between education and celebration. I think everybody should be educated about what everybody does. But to force religious celebrations on people who do not subscribe to that particular religion is just wrong. Now, my sympathy really goes out for my friends Betsy and Dave and my other Christian clergy colleagues, because the battle they're fighting is that Christmas, which should be an intensely religious time for Christians, has been co-opted by secularism and made into this monster of secular expression and materialistic expression. Last night, David Letterman was talking about this, and he suggested that Christmas should really be like the Olympics and only come every 4 years.
And whoever buys the least wins.
Correct.
That would be cool. 414-1234 for Perspectives, our pre-holiday religious program today, 800-926-8809. Sean is on the line, patiently waiting. Hey, Sean.
Hey, how are you today?
Hey, we're doing good. Thanks.
Hi, I just had a question. Historical fact shows that when Christianity was first really getting popular, you know, thousands of years ago, they wanted to stamp out paganism, and one way was to bring in and kind of, I guess, take over their holidays, and one of the holidays was Christmas. Pagans celebrated, you know, before Christianity, it wasn't Christmas, but it was a time of, like, during the winter solstice. And I'm just curious, to ask the Christians what they think about that, and because there's this whole war on Christmas, like you say, people talking about keep Christ in Christmas, but we really don't know when Jesus was born, if he was born on the 25th of December or what. So I'm just kind of curious what they thought about all this.
Oh, okay, Sean. Yeah, good question. Dave?
Another way to put that in church history is that folks will refer to it as baptizing those pagan beliefs and practices. But no, I mean, and what we do on Christmas is tell the Christmas story, and that is at the very core of who we are as Christians. I don't know, Betsy, if you have anything to add to that. Or
I mean, I think he's really specifically referring to the dates and when we celebrate and when we tell the Christmas story. And it was moved to be a part of that time of year.
Even among Christians, there's disagreements about when to celebrate Christmas.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, shepherds watching their flocks by night, and usually that's when you had the lambs, and the lambs would be born in the spring instead
right.
of, you know, so, you know, when was it? But I think all faiths, though, don't they have kind of like a long and sometimes inglorious tradition of co-opting what was there before,
Absolutely. As Wesleyans, John Wesley, you know, co-opted the beer drinking songs of England and put Christian words to them. So I think that that's an underlying theme of this conversation, in fact.
You folks did that too? Gosh, we have some songs in services or songs in Jewish tradition that co-opted German drinking songs, at least the tunes. I'm going to say something unusual for a rabbi to say, and that is I think that you should keep the Christ in Christmas. Just don't ask Jews to be part of that.
It sounds like an accommodation there. Hey, we have someone else weighing in here from the Islamic community. Bisma is giving us a call on Perspective. Hi, how you doing?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to echo what Rabbi Jack was saying about how it can be a little bit intense when you go to public schools or you're going to the mall and you see a lot of the Christmas holiday shopping and, you know, like a lot of the Christmas songs and Christmas carols. I actually grew up in Queens, New York, which is a very diverse borough. But it was always a little bit strange to celebrate, you know, Ramadan and our holidays when we didn't really see that being discussed or talked about in school or trying to get off for Eid, as Rabbi Jack was saying about Jewish kids trying to take off for Yom Kippur and stuff. And so I think if we just talk about these different holidays, like you were saying earlier, we don't have to celebrate them necessarily, but just talking about them in different arenas, it can help us, you know, help our kids feel like, okay, our holiday is also, you know, legitimate. It's also something that's acknowledged. Because I feel like maybe something that's worse than, you know, the not being celebrated is just being ignored and feeling like it doesn't even occur to other people that this is something that we engage in, this is something that we celebrate. So just wanted to echo that.
Thanks, Bisma. But while you're on the line, I have a question for you, and that is with the tendency on the part of some folks, unfortunately, in this country to kind of demonize Islam as some kind of, you know, horrible thing right now. Does that kind of make it worse for you in trying to say, well, gee, we have traditions too, and they're you know, very uplifting, and you really need to understand where we're coming from?
Of course. I mean, it is a little bit – it's always challenging. But I feel like people are more curious and they're more interested than what we generally think. I've never – you know, I've been here in Tallahassee for about a year and a half. And I've never had any negative experiences. I've never ever felt like people were judging me or, you know, making me feel awkward or anything like that. And, of course, there are questions. People are curious. But I've never felt that they were being disrespectful. And, yes, it's very difficult sometimes to deal with the fact that the whole faith as a whole has been demonized, you know, due to the media or to whatever. But I feel like generally people are very sincere when they ask. I've never felt like they were being difficult, or they were just trying to be manipulative or anything.
Gosh, that's hopeful. Bisma, really appreciate your calling in. Thanks so much for that.
Tom, just a quick word. You know, in referring to religious symbols in the public square, I think it's very important, particularly for Christians, to be thinking about those symbols as a form of speech. But as in all forms of speech, we have to be careful of tone. And so how we present those symbols is so, so important. And so I just wanted to add that to the mix here is as Christians, I mean, I'm going to want to celebrate. But if that is going to hurt someone else, any good Christian is going to say, wait a minute, got to put the brakes on a little bit here and be careful. Be careful how we speak and use our symbols.
Is that maybe the basis of – or I guess the focus of the problem, that not so much our respective faith traditions or even, you know, if we have none at all, but the – when we really try to proselytize, when my faith is right, yours is wrong, and so it is my, I guess, God-given duty to convert you, to bring you around to my way of thinking because I am right and you are – everything else is wrong.
And I think people, if they use a little common sense – and I talk about this in my community with, you know, my Jewish congregants and fellow Jews – that you can use common sense. You know who is trying to be pushy in terms of pushing their religious perspective and who is just innocently wishing you Merry Christmas because you're in the line at the grocery store and the clerk behind the counter is just trying to be nice and friendly. And, you know, I am not afraid to use the words Merry Christmas when talking to my Christian friends. It's their holiday. I want them to enjoy their holiday. And so they're not nasty words or dirty words. They're just nice words for the season that people who are Christian should be wished and enjoy.
I caught one of your presentations, though, with and he couldn't make it with us today, with First Baptist Church downtown, Reverend
Fran Buehler.
And he was urging his congregants to kind of go in the other direction and be really sensitive. If you are in a situation where you don't know the other folks, maybe hold off on the Merry Christmas, ho, ho, and just wish a happy holidays because you don't know who you're talking to and you don't want to be insensitive.
Is there a greeting around the Yom Kippur time? Is there a greeting that Jews share with one another?
Around the high holidays, on Rosh Hashanah, you would say Shana Tova, which means Happy New Year, or have a good year, or Shana Tova Umetuka, which means have a good and sweet year. At Yom Kippur, you just say maybe good Yontif, you know, have a good holy day or holiday. At Yom Kippur, we're busy with praying for atonement and not so busy with
I guess that's kind of my point. Again, the whole Happy Holidays, Merry Christmas, the festivities, the Christmas programs on TV, the Christmas candy, the Christmas everything is not really what Christianity and Christmas is about either.
You mean it's really not Charlie Brown's Christmas?
The reading of the Christmas story in that particular Charlie Brown episode is beautiful, but –
And that was the message of the story too. After all the hoopla and the presents of trying to get the perfect tree and all that was to boil it back down to the essence.
It's not Frosty the Snowman. It's not Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It's not Santa Claus. I think my challenge as a Christian minister is to help people to look past that this time. And talking about how Jews feel and other people of other faiths feel actually helps that process.
We've talked about, I guess, the things that are a little bit easier perhaps to accommodate, which can be, we understand Rosh Hashanah and we respect and honor those who celebrate it, even though we may not, but we want to learn more about it and be more ecumenical. I remember that term, especially back in the 60s when the Catholic Church decided, gee, there are other people in the world besides us, which came as a real revelation, I think, to some of the nuns who taught me, full disclosure. I was brought up in a Catholic, Irish Catholic household, and boy, Sister Joseph Mary Roller Skate, she was really something. But we found out that it was okay to hang out with Protestant kids and we wouldn't go to hell. That, we didn't know that. After Vatican II back in the 60s, that came to be. But when we look at more matters of faith and morals, if you will, and I know you guys are going to be hitting on the whole gay marriage thing coming up in a future Food Faith Friday situation, that gets a little bit more personal, doesn't it? Because if I hold this particular view and you have a view that is different, we both can't be right. Dave?
I'm not sure if I completely disagree with that. Agree with that, Tom. But what I would start by saying is, yes, faith involves our most deeply held convictions as human beings. That's absolutely true. But the key thing here, and I think this is the premise of Faith Food Friday, is that the most important thing is the relationship with each other as God's people. That you need to start with friendship and understanding. You need to bring your convictions to the table. But I believe that we need to learn from each other. And though no human being contains 100% of the truth, and we do need to listen to each other. I have learned so much being a part of this Faith Food Friday. Each one of our panels, I learned something new. And that's what I love about how this all got started, which is at a diner over food. We need to break bread together. I believe that more than anything, God wants us to do that, to have the relationship on which that trust can build. And friendship can build so that we can talk about the things that matter most in a way that we're loving each other and we're civil with each other.
Is it fear, that prevents this from happening a lot of times? Again, because I have, my convictions that I wrap myself in. They're so warm and comforting, and this is right and this is wrong, and I don't want anything to interfere with that. And if I sit down, Betsy, and talk to you and find out you're of a different mind, you may contaminate me. You may cause me to have doubts about my faith.
I think once again, as a minister, as a clergy person, my job is to address fear, and I think fear is what keeps people in small boxes. There are churches in town that are so fearful that they do preach, stay away from that person, they will corrupt your thinking. That's fear, and that's stone throwing, and I'm sad about that.
Yes, Tom.
There are also larger societal trends that this is playing into. We spend much more time with people who agree with us in almost every area of our lives. And what happens then is the relationships that Dave is talking about, the ones that we've grown through this forum with Faith Food Friday, not just with each other but with the audiences, don't exist enough anymore. And it is really just amazing to see that just by doing that, it's transformative. Just by knowing people as people, it takes care of the big things, even though it seems like such a little thing.
I have to affirm that theologically, I probably have very little to agree with Fran. But when he came to Temple Israel on a Friday night and spoke to our congregation, it was a transformative moment. He was affirming who we were and doing it in a beautiful and respectful way. And there were a number of members of his church attending that night. And the fellowship in the room after the service, where we're all talking over, you know, cookies and coffee and everything, and the comments from the members of the church about how prayerful they thought our service was and how welcoming they thought the synagogue was, and just the good feeling and interchanges between Baptists and Jews, who don't have a pretty history, by the way, was something that was very transformative and probably wouldn't have come about if we did not have the Faith Food and Friday Forum.
Religion in the public square is what we're talking about here on Perspectives with members of the Village Square God Squad. You can join the conversation at 414-1234, 800-926-8809, perspectives at WFSU.org. And we'll be right back. Happy holidays, no matter what holidays you celebrate, or even if you don't celebrate any holidays at all. See, we are very accommodating here on Perspectives as we continue our discussion of religion with members of the Village Square God Squad, three of them anyway. One of the things, though, that I still keep pushing this thing about the folks who have blinders on, and we all do, because we grew up in a particular faith tradition and perhaps we didn't explore other options or we didn't know other people who thought differently than us when it came to religion. What about those folks with no faith tradition at all and who – there's something in common here at this table amongst the three of you in that there is a commonality, a belief in the divine, a belief in God. Bisma, who called in, who's Muslim before, also believes in God. People of the book, I think, is what we call both Christianity and Judaism and also Islam, all coming from the Old Testament type tradition. But for those folks who don't believe, who just don't believe at all, is there any rapprochement there?
Well, and Jews don't really have many problems with people who are not necessarily believing in God. An ancient Jewish text teaches the righteous of all nations have a place in the world to come, which really is just a way of saying that you can be good without believing in God. You can be a good person and a moral person without having that faith belief. Do I think that we gain something additional by having a connection with God, with the divine? Yes, absolutely. But I also understand that people can be perfectly good people and live happy, productive, fulfilling lives and have no faith tradition at all.
Is that though – for some particularly Christian traditions, that kind of flies in the face of that. That the idea, you know, you are if you do not believe in God, or in the case of Christianity, of course, the divinity of Jesus and salvation and all that, that you are cast into the outer darkness, and really you're not a part of this whole thing.
You know, Tom, another perspective on that would be that if you look at Jesus himself and his life and ministry, he's very often reaching out to the people I'd call who are not the usual suspects. when it comes to faith. People who are typically considered sort of outsiders, Jesus was the one reaching out to them first. And interestingly enough, they are the folks who tend to have the most faith at the end of the day. But Jesus was reaching out to those people first and foremost. If you were hurting, he wanted to reach out to you, and he didn't ask a bunch of questions first to try to determine whether or not you were a person of faith.
Oh, okay, that's it.
Well, I was thinking about some of our theologians from the past, like Pascal has said that everyone is born with a God-shaped void. So that means everyone, even those that reject God. And then we had Anselm, and maybe you can help me with this one, but basically he said, if you reject God, you are affirming there is a God to reject. I don't know if that's helpful, but those are some of the philosophers, Christian philosophers, and some of the ideas that they've come up when talking about, is it even possible not to believe in God?
You talk about a theologian. One of my favorites growing up was a guy by the name of Father Tom, of all people. And he said, well, okay, let's look at it this way. Looking for a good outcome to your life, whether you have a concept of heaven or just that you want to get through it in one piece, and people will be able to look back on your existence with some kind of admiration or to celebrate your life, even if it is all over there. There are two ways you can get there, all right? You can walk or you can go in a Ferrari. Now, you know, if you don't believe in God, you're probably walking. You know, however, you want to get there a little bit quicker, maybe a belief in God will get you there.
Well, we've been delighted to have a very diverse audience with Faith Food Friday. We have atheists, we have Jews, we have Muslims, we have Christians. We have it's really got to be one of the most unique audiences that exists on a very difficult topic. And we almost always leave having been very real with each other and also having sort of loved each other a little more. From our perspective in the Village Square, we think we're all richer for a conversation that involves everybody. The subtitle on our title for Faith Food Friday, it's because politics wasn't hard enough, and for people of faith and no faith at all.
Okay, and give a plug for that, Liz, how folks can go and enjoy a Faith Food Friday in the future.
They're once a month during the school year. They're not a particular Friday, but they're from noon to 1. The program is free. It varies a little bit on the location. Usually, First Baptist Church downtown hosts us, but they can go online and take a look at tothevillagesquare.org. If they want food, we provide that, or they can bring a brown bag lunch, and when we take a break in the summer, and then we'll launch back again next fall.
Sounds like fun. Back to the phones we go. Tom's awaiting on line one. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, we're doing well. Thank you, sir.
Great. Well, my only expression, I guess, would be that given what happened in Newtown, Connecticut with this horrible incident up there, and of course families and children really impacted in very significant ways, I just wondered if any folks here in our synagogues and churches have thought about reaching out children to children in some expression of love and caring and concern about what's going on up there.
Okay, great, Tom. Let's go around the table. Rabbi Jack, what are you guys doing over at Temple Israel?
Well, right now I think we're still processing the grief and processing exactly what happened. Last Friday night we had a huge service because it was during Hanukkah, and we always have a huge turnout for a service where our children's choir sings and everything. And so it was a very festive evening, but we took a moment right before a prayer that prays for God to spread a shelter of peace and caring over all of us and our loved ones to see us safely through dark times. So we took a pause before that prayer, and I asked everybody to just simply, if they were sitting next to their child or grandchild, hug them. Just hug them and be appreciative that they were safe and they were with them. Going forward, I'm not sure what other response will be. I will probably speak about this a little bit on tomorrow night's service. In terms of children to children, probably there's something that we can do, have the kids send cards or something to their compatriots in Newtown. But right now, I'm still trying to wrap my head around what happened.
Yeah. Pastor Betsy, what's going on at Good Samaritan? Anything?
Well, we do have a preschool, as Jack does at his school, and our little smallest ones, most of them, many of them, thankfully, don't know, which is good. I we haven't had a real response yet, other than there's grief. There's grief. There is an understanding that we need to be as secure as we can in our own school. We also had a moment of silence and prayers, and actually my sermon changed completely. It was an Advent sermon. And somehow the conversation, the visitation of Mary and Elizabeth became about comforting one another in the unknowns and in the times of doubt. And so I think that we just enjoyed holding each other's hands in the darkness, and that's sort of where we are still at, similar to Jack. I don't know that there's much we could do, but I'd love some ideas.
Yeah. Well, Father Dave, what are you?
Like Jack, we had special prayers in our services this past Sunday. We also had a form that we called at the very last minute on Saturday night. We sent out an email to the parish where we gave parents resources for how they could talk about this with their children in age-appropriate ways, from elementary school all the way up to senior high. Tomorrow at, I believe it's 9:30, Governor Malloy of Connecticut has asked all churches that have chimes or bells to ring those bells 26 times in memory of the victims. And St. John's Episcopal Church is known for having beautiful bells. And so tomorrow we are going to solemnly toll those bells at 9:30, 26 times in memory of the victims. Going forward, I could see our Sunday school children reaching out in particular to the Episcopal Church in Newtown, Connecticut, writing letters of support and prayer so that they know that we stand with them.
And why does it seem like every faith tradition, I'm thinking here also of Buddhism and Islam, somewhere in there is a story about the murder of the innocents?
That is a part of the Christmas story. Herod massacred thousands of children trying to find the Christ child, and it is a very painful part of Scripture.
And in the Holocaust and over the centuries, Rabbi Jack, that certainly has come up again. It's not just the grown-ups who suffer. It's the kids too.
Well, that's, of course, always the deepest tragedy is the suffering of children. And I think that's part of the human story. That's part of what we have to correct. That's really our challenge as human beings and as people of faith or people of no faith, is to find ways to relieve the suffering of innocent people. Why else are we here? Why else would we believe what we believe if not to try and find ways to reach out to alleviate suffering?
Is that not maybe a larger part of the whole idea behind, again, a faith or a non-faith tradition, once we get some of the more petty stuff out of the way, is to provide that unity? Okay, we can all agree on these things. We can all do something about this.
I do believe you're right on. I was thinking about our Advent candle wreath. We light a candle each week, candle of peace, hope, love, joy. We agree that peace, love, hope, and joy are the things that we want to hang on to, promote, encourage, experience together. Those are the real, real things. And to me, that's the real Christmas too. And as a Christian, we believe that the Christ child entered to empower us to do more of that, more life-giving activity, more kingdom of God stuff.
Yeah, and by extension, more humanity.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I see a consensus building here. That's well, guys, in upcoming Faith Food Fridays, Liz, you mentioned that the incredibly contentious thing about gay marriage, that's going to be coming up too. You're going to have to call in security guards for that, do you think, or what?
So far, I can tell you I'm scared.
So far, we haven't had to do that yet. And we have a wide range of opinion on the panel, and that's really what we're after.
Any other topics that you think, maybe not quite as controversial as that, but would be good fodder for upcoming programs? Jack, what do you think?
Well, we don't have it scheduled for this year, but I don't see how we can not address at a future panel issues surrounding pro-life, pro-choice, issues of abortion, issues of conception, issues of, and all the medical issues that are attached to that. I don't see how we can avoid that issue at some point.
Especially following this program that's coming up with the feminism.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I had a member of the parish come to me recently and suggest that we do a program on homelessness here in Tallahassee nationally and look at that issue.
Well, that's that's another intersection there where it would seem that everyone would at least be able to get some kind of a consensus on how to move forward on that? I mean, we can keep, you know, blaming these people. Well, they want to be homeless, but that, you know,
it would. What about gun control now? That's the hot topic right now. I mean, and there have always been groups of Christians that have been purely pacifists and our Quaker brothers and sisters, but I don't know. Throwing out topics, that might be a
that'd be a great topic.
Yeah, and very timely.
Yeah, and that also is likely to come up, I would imagine, during the legislative session in March and April. We were already hearing from Minority Leader Chris Smith over in the House. We have a total revamping, some would say, a removal of the stand your ground provision from Florida statute. There are some other things that are coming up, maybe as far as the sale of these big old magazines that you can use for semi-automatic weaponry and all of that. So, yeah, that would be timely. Because I heard someone call into the Washington Journal on C-SPAN the other morning and equated God and guns. You know, I believe in God, and I believe in essentially my God-given right to have a gun. I didn't see that anywhere in Scripture, but I imagine there's some
going to say that having studied the Torah, having read all of the Hebrew Bible, having read the Gospels, and having read the epistles, believe it or not, I have actually studied it all. I'm trying to struggle to come up with one reference to whether or not we should be allowed to own semi-automatic weapons.
Yeah, because
I don't think there's that's a God-given right, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it seems like
not based on Scripture.
Yeah, and Jesus was kind of the ultimate pacifist in that. I mean,
turn the other cheek is one thing that he's noted as saying.
Yeah, and you know, whether it was in the Garden of Gethsemane or anything else, he could have called down divine retribution and, you know, wipe those guys out if that is, you know, what you believe, and he didn't.
What's disturbing to me, Tom, is in our public debate, what you're seeing already, though, is these trenches being dug and the battle lines formed on either side of the issue. And to me, what Faith Food Friday represents is taking apart those battle lines, sitting down at table with each other and talking about the hard issues in a constructive, productive way, rather than sort of a zero-sum approach. And that's
right.
What we're going to see in our public debate. And what we bring to the table is something very different, a very different model of moving forward.
Okay, and I see the folks who normally come to Faith Food Friday as well as the other Village Square presentations, you know, I don't want to say among the more reasonable people, but those who might be more inclined to be open to views differing from theirs. How do you get the other guys?
My perspective is that we grapple together. We bring our convictions, but sometimes those convictions are different when we're finished with the conversation because we've heard deeply from one another. And I'm kind of new to the panel. I've been to Village Square events. Like she said, at the very end, there's almost like a catalyst. There's like a fresh understanding. Sometimes that means people's minds have changed, their opinions have changed. Sometimes it means they still believe the same. They just believe with more grace towards somebody else.
And also, you know, conversations that happen in paragraphs instead of sound bites are always surprising. And the problem is our public conversation is so two-dimensional and so soundbite-ish that we choose up teams and that's where we are. But when you talk about the issue of violence and gun control in more depth at any level, it challenges everyone on all sides. And I think most people kind of think that when they really have a whole conversation.
Oh, in other words, if it can't fit on a bumper sticker, it's probably a good idea.
Correct. Exactly.
I think that the real value of what we're doing at Faith Food and Friday, I think the real value of what the Village Square is doing, is that we're not by ourselves going to be the game changer. You know, we're not going to change the world in one of our sessions. What we do is we add a reasonable voice to the right side, to the side of reasonable discussion. We're another reasonable voice. I kind of have this vision of a scale, and some of the hate radio that's out there is on the one pan of the scale, and that our dialogue and our conversations add something to the other side of the scale, that other pan. That maybe if enough of us are having reasonable conversations where we can disagree and bring different perspectives but do so in a way that's intelligent and understanding of each other, that maybe we can push that side of the scale down a little bit more.
Oh, well, isn't that interesting then that the symbol of American justice happens to be a blind lady holding a scale? It kind of plays into that whole idea. Folks, that's going to we could go on for the next couple hours. I'm really enjoying this here. But Reverend Betsy Ouellette of Good Samaritan United Methodist Church, Reverend Dave Colleen of St. John's Episcopal, Rabbi Jack Romberg of Temple Israel, and Liz Joyner, Executive Director of the Village Square. Happy holidays to all. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Merry Christmas to all our Christian friends.
And Shana Tova to all of our Jewish friends as well. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls on the phones and the photography today, by the way. Hey, I'm Tom Flanagan wishing you happy holidays, whatever you believe. We're taking some time off during Florida State University's winter break. Our next Perspectives on January 10th, we'll be finding out some new things about the connection between mind and body right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.